over two decades ago, I went and took a little road trip with my mother and my brother Clifton to visit our old haunts in Lakewood, California. We stopped by the house that my father built in 1960. We got a tour inside, and I looked at the stones that my father laid at the chimney and the front of the house. I went home and reflected not just about that, but about our family, and I wrote this song, Stones Laid by My Father. When I tried to go back home, all I found were hungry ghosts and a wall of silent stones laid by my father. All my brothers had left home with a secret each his own of the weight of silent stones laid by our Father. If these silent stones, if these stones would speak, they would tell of seven souls and the struggle to be close neath the weight of silent stones laid by our Father. And the stones my Father laid, surely too, will go the way of every building ever made and every story. For every moment that we stole lies a story left untold, fast asleep in the soul of my Father. If these silent stones, if these stones would speak, they tell of a preacher man who loved working with his hands, made the best with what he had from his Father. Fathers and sons, we are joined limb to limb. Mortar and blood, pain. Each its own, knowing none can stand alone. So sons and fathers, you'll forgive if you can own the mistakes of flesh and bone in the good and crooked stones laid by the Father.
Within 2 feet of topping that, but St. Louis is no problem. My father's gone, but he's still protecting St. Louis. 52 feet.
Thank you, Colleen. I'd love to play the guitar some more, but I got some things to say. So this is my brother Clifton's t-shirt. I found it hanging on the door handle of a closet at his house. It was not in the closet, but on the outside of the door. Like him, it was fully and proudly out of the closet. He had the same motto stuck on his refrigerator. It is how he lived a full and vibrant life as an artist, a traveler, activist, teacher, and mentor. Choosing love over and over again is how he thrived in a world that would just as soon have him shut up and disappear. I was birthed into a full-blown society of 7 Midwestern individuals, 4 older brothers and a mother and a father in the white working-class environs of Joliet, Illinois. Each of my brothers by turns served as mentors, role models, playmates, protectors, and occasionally tormentors. I love all of them. And I put some pictures in the worship folder. I don't know if you have access to them. We didn't talk about this because I was thinking about so many other things. So I will describe the picture to you. There's a whole gaggle of cousins gathered in the picture, and my brother Evan is like towering above everybody else, 14 years old. And I'm down at the bottom, 3 years old. And then there's another picture, my brother Clifton, who's sort of in the middle, 6.5 years my senior, standing with all of our brothers and our mother at the front porch of that Midwestern house. And he's got his arm around my arm, his hand around my arm. When I was in high school and Clifton was finishing his master's, our rooms were next to each other. And I got to hear through the wall Janis Joplin, Tchaikovsky, Beethoven, Sonny and Cher, The Long and Winding Road, and why do I get a call now? So, you get the picture. Mom and Dad, they loved each other, but they were so different. Mom was like a peach. What you saw is what you got, soft and sweet from the outside to the core. Dad was more like, I don't know, I'm searching for the right fruit, a kiwi, kind of rough on the outside, sweet and complex, but maybe a coconut, sweet and delicious, but very hard on the outside and hard to get into. Not everyone saw what was inside. So this picture, if you could see these 5 boys, you'd see 2, the oldest, that are going to grow up to be gay, and 3 younger ones that are going to grow up to be straight. All 5 will inherit the anti-gay prejudices prevalent in the society at large. About a year after this period, when I'm 4 years old and Clifton is 10, he is given a diary. Oh my gosh, there it is. Thank you. You're so talented back there. So there's the picture. There's my oldest brother.
Are you on the left?
Hold on, Colleen. We'll talk later. No, I'm the smallest one. I am the smallest one on the your right. And if you could go to the next picture. There we are. I'm still the smallest. That is, the 2 on the left are my gay brothers. The tallest one remained in the closet his entire life, his short life, died at the age of 34. And Clifton is next to me. So I'm glad we got those pictures up. About a year after this picture, Clifton got, he was gifted a diary for Christmas. And he, you know, the kind, the little kind with the little lock clasp. And he wrote in the front page, "Private, do not read."
How'd you know it?
And he wrote the most not private things, descriptions of his life. He got that book and he started writing and he never stopped. He filled over 60 journals, boxes and boxes and boxes of letters, 13 books of poetry, 4 novels, and a book of literary criticism and much more. 1958, 10-year-old Clifton wrote, "Merlin came to see me. He kisses everybody and loves everyone." I hope it's true. Clifton learned to play the violin. He became an excellent student, a devout Christian, and conservative. He volunteered in the Barry Goldwater 1964 presidential campaign. Then, in his late teens, however, he became ever more aware of his sexual orientation, and it became clear that there was no welcome for him in his church, the church where his father was pastor. I share these stories today not for myself or my family, but because it is the story of many others, and in some ways, it is still happening. The telling is not always easy or fun. I think it's worth remembering what life in America was like for LGBTQ folk before Stonewall, the 1969 spontaneous uprising in New York City, where queer folk finally fought back when the cops came with yet another bar raid. Before Stonewall, there was widespread discrimination and criminalization of homosexual behavior. Homosexuality was classified as a mental illness by the American Psychiatric Association until 1973. Even in the 1980s, in Long Beach, where my brother lived, attending a pride parade or being involved in any sort of public movement could be career-ending and life-threatening. Being outed guaranteed getting labeled as a sexual psychopath, blacklisted, ostracized by friends and family, and legally barred from employment in most occupations. So this is how my brother Clifton was outed to our parents. Age 19, about 3 years before Stonewall, he had his first boyfriend and breakup, which was very hard. So hard, he attempted suicide. He was rushed to the hospital, where Dad was called. Clifton told him what happened. Shortly after that, Dad preached his one and only sermon against homosexuality. Imagine the pain on top of pain for my brother. And I wonder, did Dad think he was choosing love? From here, it looks like societal prejudice and fear won the day. For Clifton, it was a lot to forgive. Around that time, Clifton started drinking. He became an alcoholic. While still in his 20s, he developed an ulcer and nearly bled to death while on vacation in Europe. Did you know that LGBTQ+ community members suffer from higher rates of substance abuse than the general population, due in part to the obstacles society places on them? LGBTQ+ people, young people, are more than 4 times likely to attempt suicide than their peers because of how they are mistreated and stigmatized in society. But in 1979, Clifton hit his bottom. He found AA, a place of love and acceptance. In his meetings, he found other queer folk on similar paths. He learned to accept himself as he was. He was 43 years sober at his passing. Sobriety enabled him to produce the poetry and the writing he created. AA was all the religion he needed, that and his poetry community. In the 12-step prayer book I found at his bedside, Clifton underlined these words: "I pray I may continue to keep love and tolerance of others as my code." Sometime in the 90s, after Dad had passed, our mother and the four surviving sons gathered for a Mother's Day dinner. One of my other brothers, out of the blue, said to Clifton, "Do you ever think about what the Bible says in Leviticus, that it is an abomination for a man to lie with another man?" Silence fell on our table as though a heavy wet blanket had dropped from the ceiling. I looked at Clifton. He recoiled just a bit, seemed to tighten his throat, and it seemed like he might say something or he might not, but I could see the wheels turning. Then Mom spoke. "You don't have to tell Clifton what the Bible says. Clifton knows the Bible. And Clifton has always been different." And that settled it. At that moment, Mom chose love. She did not enter into analysis or discussion of what the Bible does or does not say about homosexuality, of which much could be said and corrected. She simply opened her heart and closed the door on condemnation. She chose love. Meanwhile, my brother was developing a career as a teacher and English literature scholar, an expert in Jungian interpretation of literature and queer theory. The old adage that knowledge is power holds true here. In literature, Clifton discovered who his gay and lesbian forebears were: W.H. Auden, Virginia Woolf, Oscar Wilde, Carson McCullers, Emily Dickinson, Edward Fields, Walt Whitman, and more. In graduate school, Clifton discovered Carl Jung and applied his psychology to the interpretation of literature. He has a whole book on it. Not for sale out there. It's pretty dense. But it was liberating for him. Of particular interest were the archetypes of anima and animus, representing the unconscious, opposite-gendered aspects of one's own psyche. The anima is the feminine archetype in the male psyche, while the animus is the masculine archetype in the female psyche. These archetypes are not merely personal traits, but also exist as part of the collective unconscious in Jungian psychology, a shared reservoir of human experience. Clifton also studied the two-spirit tradition, a part of many native cultures, which refers to men who take on traditional women's roles and women who take on men's, people who identify with the opposite gender of their birth gender. My brother became a mentor to LGBTQ student groups. He pioneered LGBTQ studies at Cal State Long Beach, where he designed and taught the first ever course in gays and lesbians in literature there. It is his desire, and he left me a sum of money to establish a scholarship for gay and lesbian literature at that school, which has been a challenge thus far, but I'm working on it. In the proposal for the course, he argued that anthologies generally used in our literature courses now feature a token one or two openly gay or lesbian authors, if they feature any at all. Homosexual authors, he said, already accepted in the canon, frequently are not acknowledged as gay or lesbian. And even if they are acknowledged, often their work with gay subject matter is excluded. Walt Whitman is a prime example. So he noticed in his professional life what happens everywhere, or used to happen and still happens to a great extent in the greater society, disappeared, invisible. Clifton detested injustice and cruelty. He would be angry and outspoken about the cruelty of the present administration. He was a man of courage. As his friend Jonathan O'Brien reminded me, he wasn't intimidated by hateful student evaluations or vulgar voice messages from anonymous callers. He didn't back down when students would make anti-gay comments about the works he cited in class. He had the courage to trust his higher power and love unconditionally. Jonathan, who had been one of Clifton's students and later became a professor himself, shared this story at Clifton's 2021 memorial. So back in 1987, after a night at the club, they were really camping it up in the coffee shop booth and having a good time. Some of the homophobes in the booth next to them decided to share their form of bigotry with them, telling them God was watching them and they were going to hell. When Clifton and Jonathan got up to leave, Jonathan said he was too afraid to walk by them to the exit. Not Cliff. He wagged his finger at them and said, God is watching you. Shame on you. So as a youth, Clifton had been gay bashed and he wasn't going to take it anymore. He was going to choose love, self-love, love for his friend, love for all the others society would diminish. Having come to accept himself, Clifton held great compassion for others in his community, and he became a vocal and relentless advocate. He wrote letters upon letters upon letters whenever he saw homophobia in the public square. In 1984, Michael Jackson, the King of Pop, chose to have his manager release a statement denying that he was using hormones or surgery to create feminine or androgynous features, while clearly implying shame for any man not adhering to heterosexual and conventional norms of masculinity. My brother responded with a personal letter, which I found in his papers. He kept copies of everything. 7 September 1984. Dear Michael Jackson, as a gay man, an admirer of and buyer of your records, I was saddened to read the statement you asked your manager, Frank Dileo, to release. Whether you are gay or not is immaterial to me. Your words, however, I told you this wasn't easy. Your words, however, do disturb me, for you contribute further to the stigmatization of gay people, especially those young ones for whom you are, as you say, a role model. Don't you know that some of them have killed themselves because they couldn't accept themselves and society's attitudes? I've heard your music at many gay dance bars here and in Europe. We deserve better from you. Sincerely, Clifton Snyder. So I told you about the music I heard from my brother's bedroom through the wall and the door and next door that I soaked in. He loved Cher. He loved girl groups and Cher especially. I confess I didn't always appreciate the appeal until I read and reread this poem of his. Now you understand why we opened with I Got You, Babe. Until I reread and reread this poem of his and realized how in his youth the music made a connection to self-acceptance and self-love. Two things about the poem I need to tell you. It includes the French phrase, ma chérie, which is used to address a female lover or friend. And there is a reference to Cher's 2013 cover of the song, I Hope You Find It, the chorus of which goes, I hope you find it, what you're looking for. I hope it's everything you dreamed your life could be and so much more. I hope you're happy wherever you are. I hope you find it. So, on seeing Cher in concert again, you'll get to hear a little bit of his voice in poetry. She calls herself an icon now, one step above diva. When we were teens, she was simply a hero, singing Dylan, better than Dylan, when I needed a friend. I found a boyfriend. We played I Got You, Babe, in my living room when no one else was home. And so tonight, when she sings the song again live with Sunny Revived on the circular video screen, tears arrive. And I find it hard, so hard, to raise my voice again to a concert level whoop as she completes the show in her other costumes, always the same persona. Neglected goddess who rises from the foam, who knows who she is and is proud of it. As she breezes by on a shrine-like pedestal in the air and sings, I hope you find it. I have, ma chérie, I have. Merci. Ripples of love. The choices you and I make ripple out far beyond the length of our own days and our own limited vision. But what you say and do matters. In a faculty activity report, Clifton wrote, quote, my goal in composition classes is to expand my students' abilities to think logically and analytically so that they may become better writers as well as better human beings. This includes promoting tolerance and open-mindedness. I wish he could have read the tributes from former students after his passing, like this one from Lisa Alvarez. Cliff was my teacher at Cal State Long Beach a lifetime ago. I have often reflected on his wisdom, tolerance, and generosity and support, which he gave so freely. It made me a better teacher. I talk about him every semester. My youngest son reflected on the person he describes as my favorite uncle. Since as long as I can remember, he said, his presence was always warm and kind. Cliff is a reminder that being true to oneself can yield a life full of joy, love, and acceptance. He is an example to me, and certainly many others, of how to be yourself, regardless of the judgment of others. I told you earlier about an instance where our father, it seemed to me, had succumbed to societal prejudice and fear over love. I want to tell you another story I only learned a few years ago myself. I heard it from my ex-sister-in-law, who had stopped by for a visit. We hadn't seen each other in a long time. She said, your father was an amazing man. Now, our family always gathered at the parents' house for Thanksgiving. like many families. Many years ago, long before the infamous Mother's Day dinner, one of my brothers came to the house and met with the parents. He said, "The Bible says we shouldn't eat with sexually immoral persons, and I don't think Clifton should be allowed to come to Thanksgiving dinner." This is what Dad said. "Clifton is our son. We love Clifton. Clifton is welcome in our home. If you feel like you can't be here, that's your choice. But Clifton is welcome here. Thus saith the preacher." So he chose love. I heard this story long after Dad was gone, and I'm sure he never shared it with Clifton because, well, it's very hard, isn't it? It's hard to hear. It's hard to say. But I was able to share it with Clifton, and I know it meant a lot to him. Cliff never accepted intolerance toward himself or others, but he understood where his parents came from and that they were on a journey. And it's not just one family. It's other families, maybe your family. It's an entire culture that has to learn not just tolerance, but celebration of our diverse humanity. At Clifton's memorial, I told the group assembled and the family, I said, "Being gay is not a sin. It's not a disease. It's a gift. And you are all a gift. And Clifton was such a gift." In the book of Genesis, you know the story, how out of jealousy and anger, Cain kills his brother Abel. And God asks Cain, "Cain, where is your brother?" Cain says, "I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper?" I'm told that the Hebrew word for keeper means guard, to guard, to protect, to watch over. Cain, you don't know? Don't you know? Don't you know you are your brother's keeper? Today there are many brothers and sisters in need of protection. And if I follow my brother's motto, my answer will be yes, I am. And I will choose love. How about you? So I did it. I got through. And now I think, Anthony, we're going to sing a song. I think I get to get my guitar out again. And we all need, I've got to get to the right page.
Great picture.
Oh, yeah, there it is. You can see, that's my brother and I. You can see he copied my style. We are gay and straight together.